Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
They've just not been able to string together baskets.
Shamet knocks down the three. Ananobi floats it over to Shamet. Shamet, a three-pointer. It's good! Tie game with 44 seconds to go! Brunson cross-court. Shamet puts it up. Puts it in! A nine-point lead, timeout Cavs!
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today's Wednesday, May 20th. This is episode 233. I'm Gino, joined by my co-host, Kevin Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like. Join our pages. We want you to join our pages. If you got a question, send it out to us. We'll get back to you. Tonight, we go around the world of sports. We're going to start it out with the Knicks here in New York. Wow, what a game last night. Game one against Cleveland. The Knicks with a 115-104 win in overtime. They erase a 22-point lead. They come back from the point that they're down 93-71. They outscore them 44-11, including overtime. It's a hell of a run. Brunson's 38 gets them the win. Kev,
woo! Second largest fourth quarter comeback in NBA playoff history. Only the 2012 Clippers at a 24-point comeback beat the Knicks. I mean, that's how historical this comeback was. You know, the Knicks all of a sudden turning around. I wonder how much of it was a little bit of rust versus rest early on. The Knicks were out of sync a little bit, obviously, to get down by 22. And I think Cleveland just started running out of gas in the fourth quarter. You know, you take a look from that big lead, Mitchell and Harden, the rest of the game combined 1-for-10 field goals, including 0-for-5 from three. Total of 3 points, a couple of turnovers. Mitchell's last field goal was with 8:19 left in the game, in regulation, I should say. So he didn't do much. Harden was held to 5-for-16. Then all of a sudden they started taking advantage and the turnstile D on him. And Kenny Atkinson, what the hell was he doing saving his timeouts during that run? Terrible, terrible coaching job by Kenny Atkinson. And the Knicks got hot. And you know, you mentioned Darren the other night, you know, that three-pointer by what's his name? You thought was going to be the it for Cleveland.
Mobley. I thought Mobley's three was huge. Yeah. They went back up 7. And you're like, oh.
But, you know, Brunson, like you said, Gina, Brunson had a huge game and went 15 for 29. So he shot over 50%. And I thought when you looked at the end of regulation and definitely into overtime, as soon as Cleveland went for the double team, he was getting the ball out. It wasn't him dribbling, drawing the. It was as soon as the guys came to him, he got it out. Mostly it seems like OG was the key guy, the pressure release valve there. You get it to OG, and all of a sudden it's 4-for-3. And the Knicks felt like they scored almost every time down at the end in overtime. Did you see the same thing, Darren?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Harden's defense allowed Brunson to get really hot. I mean, the Knicks got exactly what they wanted during that stretch. They just did. It was just Brunson against Harden. And they didn't send the double team at first. They just let him out there and allowed Brunson to do what Brunson sometimes does, which is become the hottest player in the NBA in the fourth quarter. And he just kind of did it. And then, you know, yeah, I thought Atkinson had some questionable things. The timeout thing was kind of ridiculous. You got to use them. You got to try to stem the tide a little bit. Not switching Merrill onto Brunson earlier stunned me that they didn't do that. I mean, Harden was a turnstile. I mean, they had Harden on Cat for a while. I mean, they're just trying to bury Harden wherever they can. They can sit there and talk about how Harden's one of our better defenders, but there's no way. There's no way you could see that. And even with all that, you know, Merrill's shot was halfway down. They could have won it, and it bounced, yeah, and it rolled out. Yeah. And you just felt really, really good about what the Knicks were going to do. Shamet had three huge threes. won in overtime. Actually, put them up by nine. But the big one was the one that tied it up late. And obviously he was the first one. They were down 20, hit the three to cut it to 17. Kev?
17 minutes for Shamet, and he was plus 25 when they were on. They were plus 25 when he was on the court, I should say. In only 17 minutes. What an impact he had in that game.
And the thing about it is you see the bench actually be a factor, Gino. Like we talked about with Tibbs for a while. And I'm not trying to kill Tibbs on this, but we don't even know if Shamet sees the light of day in the fourth quarter on the Tibbs last year.
He doesn't.
He most likely – it's just – most likely it's Hart and Ananobi and Bridges with Brunson and Cat, and you're not going to see anybody else. And all of a sudden, Shamet – and you know, Bridges hit a couple of huge threes as well, not to take anything away from him. But Shamet hit the big shot of the game. He tied it up with the friendly bounce, so to speak. Yes. The little kiss, G. Kev had the little kiss down the stretch.
Kev, yep. I think it's a good point about rust. I think the first half they looked off. They wound up shooting 10 for 33 from three. That's way lower than what they normally shoot. I don't expect them to come out hot like they did game four against Philly, where they were unconscionable. Okay. But you know, 10 for 33, and that's with how hot they got the last 7 minutes of the game to get to that point.
Yep.
When you get down that many points and you start coming back, you could tell at that point, I thought you started getting Cleveland on the ropes. And not when you were down, not when you got it down to three, but when you got it down to 10, Cleveland now is on the ropes. And yep. They're not making changes. Harden's still in the game. You got it, Kev. They're not calling the timeout.
I don't know.
And you guys have it right. How Harden's still on the floor guarding Brunson at that point, I have no idea. I mean, you went a good 3.5-4 minutes. Brunson scores 11 straight points.
Yep.
And he has 8 straight points. Cleveland comes down. They miss a shot. He comes back down the other way, and he doesn't even look anywhere. He takes 2 steps in and just drains a three, and it's boom. And yep. the whole Garden goes just ballistic at that point. Listen, this is the game you lost last year, game one against Indy. This is the game you lost. This is the one you had to have last year, and you lost in the Eastern Conference Finals. You got it this year. Hopefully this propels them now.
The one thing I'll say, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, from the Cleveland side, this is a game you had to have if you're up 22.
And that's it.
You're on the road. You're playing the team. You're coming off the 7-game series. And, yeah, you're tired, but you're up 22 and you have a chance to steal game one and go back to Cleveland at worst 1-1 and you blow it. That's bad news for the rest of the series, you feel like, for Cleveland.
It is. But on the negative, on the Knicks side, Cat doing some Cat things. Outside of the Atlanta series, we haven't seen anything good from this guy. He looked, again, lost.
Well, was good.
The pulling on what could have been a flagrant foul – just trying to dribble through smaller guys. And the hack of Mitch worked really well last night. And it's to the point where we're not going to see a lot of Mitchell Robinson, because they're doing this in the third quarter just because they know they can. They're going to give up 1 point or no points against a team that's prolific offensively, and nobody gets into a rhythm. And that's how you muck up the Knicks. And, you know, for all the things that he does well, you'd figure he'd find somebody to teach him how to hit a freaking free throw. But he can't. Was it 2-for-8 last night, I think it was?
Yeah,
and it's just embarrassing. And so those are the things the Knicks are going to have to clean up, because Cat just played sloppy. And he might be rusty or anything, but he should have been rested. And at the same point in time, Mitch can't be on the court in any major minutes in the second half because he's just going to get fouled. So now it becomes a totally different kind of feel for this team of how they're going to play big. If Cat can't be on the court, you're going to see moments where Ananobi's playing the five. Yeah, I mean, you're going to see some interesting lineups for the Knicks if Cat doesn't start getting his game together, Kev.
I think you're going to see Hook Porter. You have to see him a little bit more. He didn't get off the bench. He's going to have to play some. You're really going to have to limit Mitch to beginning of the second quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter. If they want to foul him four times real quick before they get into the bonus and have him in the bonus, the Knicks is a team in the bonus at 10 minutes, go ahead. You know, once the Knicks get that fourth team foul for them in those two quarters, you're going to have to take Mitchell off the court.
He's a liability right now, especially for a team that's fluid offensively, and it hurts them a little bit. Like you said, Cleveland, it was the game for them to win. They didn't. Strus not being out there for a huge stretch, that guy's just annoying as hell. He hits a lot of shots, does a lot of good things. I thought Atkinson just, who I think is a good coach. I thought he was a good coach with the Nets. Showed me nothing last night, G.
So we were on the Sports Nuts last week, the podcast, and they asked the question about who I'd rather see play. And I said Detroit for this reason. It's because I don't want to play Harden. I don't want to play against Mitchell. I don't want to have to play against Mobley. And for the first half, it was like reverberating in my head. It was revert the whole time. I'm like, and this is exactly why. And this is exactly why. And Mitchell's running around throwing bombs. And you know what? All of a sudden it just stopped. Like, we got into that fourth quarter and it all stopped. And Allen and Strus and Merrill, all these guys can hit shots. Detroit had none of that. I mean, this was the reason I said Detroit. But at the end of the day, we're now up 1-0. And, you know, let's move this along. You gotta think, Darren, Towns has one of these in the next couple of games here. We have a Towns game. We gotta think, based on the playoffs, we get a Towns game. So if we get one of those, are we going to get that four foul game again from Towns? Let's hope not.
Listen, it comes out, they have to come out and win game two. I mean, you had this comeback. Now you got to step on the throat a little bit, say the Garden's got mystique. You don't have it. You got to sit there and bury them. You go back to Cleveland, anything can happen. And, you know, simply for they'll be all fired up, and you hope to steal one out in Cleveland. You need to get out 2-0 though. You came back and won this one, and now you have to capitalize on it. You can't give a game away in game two.
And you know what? I feel like, you know, a little point with Brown versus Tibbs. You know, Brown willing to play the bench and willing to find the combination that will work. He's willing to tinker during the game and come up with that spark that, you know, last night was Shamet.
Yep.
So tomorrow night could very well be Alvarado coming off the bench for some big minutes, or Deuce McBride.
Exactly.
Or somebody, you know, you never know.
And but that's what's the beauty of the Knicks. The second and the fourth, you're seeing Brunson and you're seeing Kat sitting a little bit. You're seeing guys get into the game.
Yep.
And that's always been – that was the one knock on Tibbs, because we all think he's a really good coach.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that he just didn't – in playoff situations, even regular season, but really playoff, he didn't trust the bench. And, you know, you have Josh Hart playing 48 minutes, and Josh Hart is a nice player that does a lot of things, but he's not a superstar enough where you want him out there for 48 minutes. You know, just those are the things that we're seeing different with Brown, and let's see what happens going forward, G.
I'm also gonna bet we see a better Anunoby the next couple of games.
Oh, he's coming off
injury. Okay, I and that's it. You know, I think first game back, and I think you saw him
down the stretch.
You saw him drive the basket when we got to overtime. Like, he's like, all right, I'm letting it loose now. So I kind of got a feeling we're going to see a little different Anunoby game two, which should help.
The thing about Anunoby is normally a very efficient player.
Right.
He was anything but efficient last night.
Oh, yeah.
That's when you know he's out of sorts. He's not a guy that puts up volume shots. He scores points with less shots than a lot of the other guys. And he was not efficient last night. But his defense and his ball handling, and as the outlet, like you were saying, on that little double team trap, he'd be the guy cross court that Brunson would throw it to, and he'd either go back to Brunson or go 4-on-3 in a different attack and set up the offense. But yeah, listen, now we find out what happens tomorrow night, boys. That's what we find out, you know.
All right. In the West,
Pat can, good. just going to say the one interesting thing I saw about Cat, third straight year he's in the conference finals. Last year with the Knicks, year before with the Minnesota. 34 games in those two runs, he had 66 assists. The first 10 games this year, last night was the 11th, he's got 71 assists.
Yeah,
just in this year. So if he's playing like that, take care of the turnovers. He had 7 turnovers. Yep. Clean that up, clean up the sloppiness. You know, he could be huge for this team to win this in 4 or 5.
Yeah. Well, yep, I think so. He should have an advantage over Jared Allen, and they got to take advantage of that.
All right. Out west, San Antonio won game one against Oklahoma City, 122-115 in double overtime. Wemby, huge game, 41 points, 24 rebounds. Kev?
Yeah. The last Friday, San Antonio got the win against Minnesota to finish that off. So OKC had some extra rust. You know, I thought the San Antonio came in with a good amount of rest there. And it looked like in the first half, San Antonio got by double digits in the first half. OKC made a run, then San Antonio got back up by double digits. They led by 10 early in the fourth quarter. Yep. But OKC still made the run. And it wasn't so much, unlike Cleveland that felt like they were choking the game away, I felt like this one was more OKC making plays. San Antonio made some. OKC made more. And by the time they got down to the 2 minutes, I mean, they kept going back and forth. You had Wemby with the two-pointer, giving the lead with 11 seconds left. SGA gets into the paint, scores to tie it. And then Wemby has a chance, and Chet Holmgren, that block on Wemby, as time expired at regulation. Wow.
No doubt about it.
Overtime. You know, again, nip and tuck, back and forth, and then Wemby pulls up from 27 to tie it with 27 seconds left. That was the Steph Curry range.
41-23, 3 assists, 3 blocks.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Guy hits a 28-footer from – and it was only 3 of the night that he hit. I mean, he's a matchup nightmare.
Yeah, sure.
The funniest part about it was Caruso was the guy for OKC. He had 31 in 31 minutes. I mean, he was – and he was guarding Wemby for part of the game. They were doing a lot of smaller guys because – it's really hard to understand why they want Wemby outside so much when he has that height advantage, but that's the way the offense flows and plays through. But, wow, he is such a matchup nightmare. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He really just is. And when he pulled up, I mean, it was like a, I don't know, what would you call it, delayed break, so to speak. They had a little bit of an advantage, and he just got it and just, you know, pull up from 27, 28, boom, swish. You're like, oh my God, this guy's 7'5"?
7'5", 7'6", something like that.
Whatever it is, weighs about 85 pounds, but he can shoot. And oh my God, I mean, just ridiculous. Stephen Castle, something to work on because they're playing without Fox and they're playing without him again tonight.
Yeah.
11 assists, 11 turnovers. You don't like that 1-to-1 there so much. If it was 2-2, you live with it. 11-11, he can't have that many turnovers. And then the other stat I saw that, you know, how did Rutgers not make the tournament with Harper and Ace Bailey on the squad going 15-17 last year? But you saw the loss with SGA, 7-for-23. But down the stretch, he was the guy hitting the shots a lot. Yeah. And it wasn't a lot of phantom foul calls. He was earning him with some nice moves, I thought. You know,
and even with the 7-for-23, he had 12 assists too. So it was not
he did, no doubt.
Like he was distributing real well. Like I said, just a fun game. I think it's going to be a fun series. And especially with Harper in the lineup over Fox.
Yep.
The average age of that starting lineup last night, 22 years, 346 days. The youngest starting lineup ever in a conference final.
Wow.
They're under 23 years old? What? Gino, you and I have kids that are almost 23.
It's crazy. It really is.
I mean, when you put it in that perspective, it's like, geez, wow. And being that young, and OKC's not that much older.
No, not at all.
And they have 8,000.
This could be the finals matchup for the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, and just remember something, though. I mean, Spurs kind of controlled them this year. They beat them 4 out of 5. It's not like this is a fluke win. The Spurs are the one team that really gave OKC fits. And they're better with Fox because he's going to hit the shots a little bit more. Don't get me wrong. but have the youth that they have out there with Harper and Castle on top of it. And, you know, they're going to be around for a while. OKC's what, 37 first-round picks in the next 4 years? Whatever it is. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. And Presti should be they should just make him the executive of the century because he's done everything right with OKC. Yeah. They're only going to keep getting better. But, yeah, it looked like there was a little bit of rust.
All right, OKC right now is up 51-45 with about 4 minutes left in the second. So we'll see how that winds up. Other NBA news today, Jason Kidd was ousted as coach. Any comments, guys?
He's a good coach, and, you know, they just – after they traded Luka, you know, what do you expect him to do? I know he – sounds like, you know, he probably complained a little bit about his conditioning. He wasn't always the fittest guy in Dallas. But you know what? I'd hire Jason Kidd. Half the team needs to hire Jason Kidd, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think the Knicks will right now. I think they're going to give Brown a shot.
I would think so.
I mean, here, but he'll have plenty of opportunities, and Kidd will be back on the sidelines, like you just said, Kev, very soon.
Yep.
All right, let's head over to the ice. Last week, we knew three of the four teams that were in. Montreal winds up getting into the conference finals with a 3-2 overtime win in Game 7 against Buffalo. Kev?
Yeah, that series, the road team won the last three games.
Yep.
Montreal winning twice up in Boston. It close series and games, but none of the games were really that close until Game 7.
Game 7.
And Montreal went out there. Montreal controlled it early. Buffalo controlled it from about halfway through the second period. For the rest of the game, I mean, they had a huge shots advantage. They were able to come back from 2-0, tie it up. And then Alex Newhook, the overtime game winner, second game seven game winner in the series, in the playoffs already, only the second guy to do that.
Yep.
Nathan Horton from the Boston Bruins in 2011 did that. And that sets up Montreal will play a team. I think the last time they played a game, they were known as the Hartford Whalers. It's that long ago that they played.
It was May 9th, but it's close. It's well over a week.
11 days. 12 days by the time they play. No, 11. You have to go back to 19 for the last time somebody had that long off. I'm talking 1919. Montreal had 12 days off. Carolina's coming in with 11-day layoff.
The thing about it is Montreal won this game because of Dobish. I mean, that was it. I mean, the advantage in net, if you watched any of the series, was prevalent for Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Lukanen is not the player. Lyon is not the player. Buffalo, you see the talent out there. They move the puck real well. They shoot. They're very fast. You know, guys like Tuck didn't have a series that they were hoping for and stuff like that. But they were down 2-0 in this game, scraped back, tied it up, did everything right. And obviously, Newhook winning it. Again, he beat they win two road game sevens. I mean,
yeah.
You know, what are you going to say about Montreal? And it was because Dober stood on his head. He is definitely, you know, the only reason why they're here. I don't know if I give him an advantage over Anderson in the playoffs because he's been great for Carolina. It should be a fun series. I don't expect Carolina to sweep them, but I do think Carolina's going to get through. If you're going to ask me my opinion on that one, I just think they're a little bit better right now.
Yeah.
Right now, odds to win the Stanley Cup, Colorado +140, Carolina +170. And then there's a big gap. Las Vegas at +550 and Montreal at +700. So Vegas – the Vegas odds makers really thinks there's a huge gap between the two favorites and then the other two teams right now. Right now, Colorado hosting Las Vegas Knights, 0-0, 11 minutes in the second. So,
yeah, Darren, you know, yeah. Colorado was a better team all year, but Darren, you like Vegas.
I think Vegas wins this year. I think the torch factor does something. McCarr's out again tonight. Which, you know, when Cole Makar is not leading that power play or leading that rush, it's a very different, team. Nothing against Devin Toews and the rest of the defensemen out there, but when Makar's banged up, it hurts him a little bit. Stone also out, by the way, for Vegas, who's one of those key agitator type of players. I just think that Vegas can skate with him. I think you got guys like Eichel, who have the skill level to play with them, I think they find a way. I know Wedgwood had a good year. I'm not sold on him as a money goalie. I'm gonna take Vegas to win this one in seven, and I'm gonna take Carolina to win the other one in five. But I think that it's I'm gonna go that route. I think Carolina wins it all. And again, I gave you guys the stats last week. Only five times has a team gone 8-0. Last time was Montreal in 85. Before that was 69. Where only Kev was born out of the three of us for St. Louis. And that was the only one that didn't win the cup. And then we had 62 and 58. But, I mean, it's, you know, Carolina's on an historic run. I think they're going to find a way to get through.
All right. Let's move over to baseball. Yankees before today at 30-19. Three back of Tampa Bay. Mets at 21-27. 11.5 back of Atlanta. Darren, let's start it with the Yankees.
Well, actually, I'm going to give you guys a couple of little.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, you have a couple of buried treasures for us.
They're not really buried treasures, but this one is kind of one. Okay, only three players in baseball history, gentlemen, are left-handed, and in their first 162 games, had 30 homers, 100 ribbies, and 100 walks.
Juan Soto.
That's one.
You'd have to think Ted Williams.
That's two.
I gotta give you somebody like Ben Rice because he's.
Well, you're not that far off though. Go ahead. Nick Kurtz.
Nick Kurtz. Wow.
The historic start this kid's off to that no one's talking about is ridiculous. He's got about a 48 straight game on base streak going right now. He either walks or hits every single time. The other one, just in a quick baseball point, just because it's kind of amazing to me. Trevor Bauer, okay, in four starts, mm-hmm. He's 3-1, ERA of 1.41 over 32 innings. He's thrown the no-hitter. It was a seven-inning doubleheader no-hitter, but nonetheless, he struck out 15 in his last start, a Ducks record. I know he was arrested. I know he was arraigned. I know he was found innocent. You can't tell me there's a team out there that doesn't need this guy. I'm curious about what the hell this guy did on top of – for him to be acquitted and still nobody wants to touch him when you know he's got the stuff, you can't tell me he wouldn't help out any rotation in Major League Baseball right now.
There's a team a couple miles west that could use a couple of starting pitchers.
No doubt. I heard that – there's a rumor I heard that the Phillies had a contract in and MLB squashed it. I don't know. I don't know what this guy did. I don't know if that's true, by the way. It's something I read. But I wasn't able to follow up anything and – Grock didn't know if it was – it didn't have anything official, so I couldn't go with anything there. But I just don't get it. I mean, wow. You know, the guy is still – you know, he's still able to go. I obviously, there's something more to the story than we even know, because even though he was acquitted, he is never going to play in the major leagues again by everything I'm seeing, because right now he's only going to get older and going to have less people interested in him. But, you know, right now he's doing everything right.
Yep.
I don't know. Then let's talk Yankees, G.
All right.
Listen, I don't care. This bullpen sucks. It just sucks. It just sucks. I mean, you have to almost underhand it in order for Tyrone to hit that three-run home. I mean, he can't hit out of a paper bag, and he's going to tie it up against Bednar? I had to watch Doval scrape through last night. I know everybody's bullpen sucks. I don't care. Whatever Cashman's doing, wrong. This pen is horrible. I don't trust anybody. There's nobody I trust. Cruz, maybe a little bit. Hill, he looks like he's 80, but, you know, in the sixth inning, I can live with it. Outside of that, I know everybody sucks, but I don't watch everybody every night. Watch this team blow leads. It drives me freaking crazy. Cole back tomorrow night. That's good news.
That is good news.
Rodon's back. Cole's back. I mean, so you're seeing, you know, some of the rotation come together a little. Schlittler has become one of the premier pitchers in baseball right now. I mean, he's that good right now. He's that dominant. I know he's on the hill tonight. I know there was a rain delay. I don't know if they started yet. But he's been lights out. Him and Yosevich tonight, by the way. If you like great young starters, this is one of those matchups you'd want to watch. There's only game two of the NBA playoffs and game one of the NHL playoffs and that and everything else. But you got two great starters. going on. Ryan McMahon all of a sudden, Gino, getting a hit here and there. Volpe's come up like he knows what he's doing. There's some things happening that are nice. Chisholm's being part of the roster. He's hitting homers in clutch spots, but they still lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets because Bednar couldn't get out Tyrone Taylor.
Bednar couldn't get him out, and then Benj with that grounder that
they run into each other.
Came in from the outfield. You know what? I got a question for you, though.
Yep.
You're not allowed to shift, but you can play as many infielders as you want.
It's the stupidest thing in the world.
Why can't you set up the defense how you want to set up the defense?
Listen, I
still hate the not shift.
I hate the shift too, but you know what? If a team wants to play it, they should be able to play it. Because professional baseball players should learn how to hit.
Exactly. Why should you limit the team defense as a team? I know we had this argument two years ago. But you'll have 5 infielders.
Yeah, it's silly. And then I got to listen to Gary Cohn talk about the great RBI game-winning shot by Benj. That's why Gary Cohn sucks. Hernandez and Darling are great. Gary Cohn's an embarrassment to announcing. Sorry. I hate that guy. Anyway, that's my pick on the Yankees.
Mets should have some bad news out of that weekend, though, with Holmes getting his fibula broken by the Spencer Jones come. But he stays in, finishes the inning, then comes back out for another couple of batters.
Listen, I'm not rooting against Holmes. I like Clay Holmes. I just said Holmes in the second half is not the guy you want.
Well, he won't be around.
Keep him up till June. He makes the All-Star team. Then come July, he fizzles out. Gino and I watched it for a few years. He was great in the first half every time. He's an All-Star. Then you watch the second half. Like, he can't get anybody out. Anyway, any points, G, on the Yanks?
They're 30-19. They have the third best. They're tied for the third best record in the majors. Their stars are pitching pretty much fantastic day in and day out. Yes, the bullpen needs another arm. I don't know where you're going to get one because everybody's bullpens suck. Find me a team that's in the bottom third of the league that has a good bullpen arm, and let's make a bid for him. But I guarantee you there aren't many.
There'll be a couple.
I'm sure there will be.
More than 5.
Excuse me?
Don't make sure starters can't go more than 5, even though everybody's bullpen sucked. We'll count them in 5 innings of starters.
Gino, here's the stat to remember, and I love the record too, and they are playing well. Do you know the Yankees' record against winning teams? 0-6. They're the only winless team against a team with a winning record in Major League Baseball. It doesn't matter. Okay. They're still 30-19, but they haven't beat anybody yet, and the AL sucks. The AL has everybody below 500, so it's very hard to win those games. But they went to Tampa. They got swept. They have not been good against good teams.
Okay. Listen, I when you are a Yankee fan and you basically make the playoffs every year, I find it very difficult as a Yankee fan every year to get excited or unexcited about May baseball. I try to stay involved, but I find it very uneventful and unexciting to get involved in May baseball, specifically when you are already 11 games over 500. So,
you know, my only point's going to be this, because all 3 of us have the same reason why we're involved. It's just fantasy. It's the reason why May becomes interesting. Outside of it, and Vegas took a 1-0 lead, by the way. But outside of that, I probably wouldn't be engaged at all.
Okay.
No, I have none of these guys in the bullpen on my roster. Thank God. But you sit there and you're watching it, and you catch yourself torn. You're like, oh, my hitter's coming up against Bednar, and I want him to get a hit, but I don't want him to get a hit. So you catch yourself watching things you don't want to watch. But I get your point.
Unrelated to this point, I want to just tell you guys something. So I was on ESPN's website, and I was in the standings. I was looking at Major League Baseball standings because I was trying to look at run differentials and stuff. They have a way of sorting standings by overall major leagues, not American League, National League. You can sort the entire 30 teams.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any games? The last play, the 30th team would be out of first place right now. And the only reason I'm doing this, if this was Premier League soccer,
they'd be relegated.
Who would be relegated? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. The Los Angeles Angels have the worst record in baseball right now. Can you tell me, what do you think? What?
15-30, 20 games back?
16.5. That means 30 teams are basically separated by 16.5 games. For whatever reason, I thought it was going to be at least 20 at this point, and it's only 16.
It's only halfway through May.
I understand, but for whatever reason, some of these teams look like they're completely horrible, and they're not.
Yep. When we saw the Angels come into town and Trout hit like 5 homers in 3 games, and it looked like the Angels were going to finally start to turn it, and then all of a sudden, after they left town, they've fallen apart. You know, you're right. They have the worst record in baseball.
The only other thing I want to just throw at you, Darren, and that is I agree Yankees probably do need another bullpen arm somewhere. If the American League, actually, and National League, continues to be at the level that they're all playing, there are not going to be many teams that are going to be trade partners because
you're going to have to overpay like last year, everybody overpaid.
And not only that, but right now, the whole American League is separated for the wild card by 7 games. And if you take out the Angels, it's 5 games.
No, I get it. I mean, the funny part, though, is you look at a team, and I follow them. You look at a team like the Padres, and you see a guy like Estrada, who's not necessarily in. He's like the 6th inning guy. Or a guy like Matsui. Or, you know, they have guys that are not prevalent where if they can – you might be able to trade them a young prospect. And I'm using them as an example because they have a pretty good pen, even though they blew the game last night, you know, because everybody blows these games lately.
Yeah,
but you have to find the right team, and you're going to have to overpay. Remember last year there was a lot of overpayment, and we all thought Doval would be better than he's been, and Bednar got off to a good start. Now he's slumping, and now it makes Devin Williams look like he's a star.
Yeah.
And here's Kevin talking about how much he loves Ewing, and how much he loves giving Nolan McLean a 6-run lead. Nolan McLean is better when he's up 1-0. He doesn't need 6 runs.
Yeah.
Kev, tell us about the Mets.
I love A.J. Ewing.
It's not the love. The kid's good. I
mean, he's hitting 300 after tonight. But, you know, to me, a 21-year-old comes up first 9 games, he's got 7 walks. That's some play discipline, too, there. He's provided some spark. Benji at the top. I mean, my goodness, it's almost a month now. He's hitting about 330. He's really turning on. And all of a sudden, you know, Soto had a couple more home runs tonight. Bichette had some home runs the last couple of days. You know, they're a little bit more fun to watch. You know, the kids have come up. Zach Thornton came up today, started, gave up the 3-run shot in the first to Abrams, and then Selden only gave up another run pitching to the 5th. But, you know, we've got to bring in the bullpen because, you know, third time through the lineup, we can't have him do that. But at least they're more fun to watch now. And, you know, they even brought more Beto to replace Slater. So the number day 8. They started.
Number 8.
That bothers me.
I had to say it. It's
can't give a number 8. World.
Even Gino and I as Yankee fans can't believe that Carter's number is not retired as a Met.
No. You got Rails' number from 86 up there. Where's Carter's number up there? Come on.
He's the guy that saved the season. 2 outs, nobody on. Base hit, Gary Carter. He saved the damn season. He started it up. I don't know.
But, you know, they've been playing better. They've lost the last 2 out of the 3 to Washington, game 4, and then they traveled to Miami. But a couple of their games the last 2 days lead into some of my gems. So the Monday night game, back and forth, 11 innings, top of the 12th, 10 runs. In the 12th inning, tied the National League record set by Cincinnati back in 19. And I'm talking 1919.
And that was the World Series champion Cincinnati Redlegs because the White Sox did throw the series.
And the 1887 Boston Braves also had 10 runs in extra innings. The major league record is
Gino had a minus the runs too. Gino hit that one.
Texas has the record, 12 runs in the 15th inning in 1983. Tuesday night, you know, McLean's trouble, worst start he's ever had.
It was stunning. When I saw the whole 6-0, I thought there was no way they lose that game.
Yep. James Wood with the inside-the-park grand slam, pretty rare. fourth time this century, there's been an inside the park grand slam.
Wow.
Raimel Tapia, 2022 Tampa Bay. Michael Taylor for Washington in 2017. And Aaron Alther from Philly against Washington in 2015. Four times in the last decade plus, and three of them have been involved in Washington. The Mets have never had an inside the park grand slam. The Yankees have had at least one. The last one was in 1965. Any guesses?
Mantle?
Nope.
We're at the very end of Mantle.
Bobby Richardson.
No.
Joe Pepitone?
Nope. See, you're thinking offensive players.
Oh, God.
Mel Stottlemyre.
Oh, God.
Mel Stottlemyre had the last Yankee inside the park grand slam in 65.
Oh, my God.
Too funny. But Mets have gotten done playing Washington, or they're still playing Washington. Coming into today, Washington had scored 271 runs, led the major leagues 13 more than Atlanta. They had given up 290 runs, 16 more than Houston for the most runs given up. Only one team since expansion to 30 teams in 1998 have led in both runs scored and most runs allowed. That's the 2008 Texas Rangers.
Wow.
So we're only a quarter of the way through the season. Still a lot of time left, but Washington going for history there.
They're a fun offensive team to watch. James Wood's a player, man. I'm telling you, man. His strides around the base. I mean, the Mets didn't know where the ball was. Made that Park shot easier, but he glides around the bases is impressive.
Warren Beal was playing out there in his first game, crashes into the wall. Taylor checks on him and says, where's the ball? Warren Beal was the one that got up and chased it down, but too late by then. Monday night, overtime game seven hockey, double overtime basketball, Mets crazy 12th inning. And then at the end there, it's like, oh, JT Ginn's got a no-hitter through eight. And it's a scoreless game. Athletics put up one in the top of the ninth. JT Ginn comes out, gives up the single to Frazier and the home run to Nito, and they lose 2-1.
Felt bad for the kid. I really did. Yeah.
First time since Vida Blue in 1976 that an Oakland A starter lost to no-hitter in the ninth. And funny enough, you go back, the last major league no-hitter was in Imanaga and two relievers in September of 24 against the Pirates. Eight times since then, the team has gone into the ninth inning with a no-hitter and lost it.
Wow.
Three of those eight teams have now lost the game, period.
Oh, my God.
So you carry a no-hitter into the ninth inning, you're only 5-3.
No lock at all. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
One last baseball point. Don Mattingly, of course, over the weekend had to get permission from the GM Preston Mattingly to attend the PhD graduation from Purdue for Taylor Mattingly. So he got permission from one son to attend the other son's graduation. So Dusty Wathan managed. He joins the exclusive rank of father-son manager combinations. His dad was John Wathan.
Yep.
Managed KC in California. And of course, his claim to fame, most stolen bases by a catcher.
He was a good base stealer for a catcher. He was no John Stearns, in my opinion, but you know.
So they joined Felipe Alou and Luis Rojas, Bob and Aaron Boone. I know you love Aaron Boone in there. Buddy and David Bell, Bob and Joel Skinner, George and Dick Sisler, and Connie and Earl Mack.
Wow.
Earl filled in a couple of times interim, but that's it. Those are all the Sun managers in baseball.
Well, that's cool. Good stuff.
Hell of a list, too.
Yeah. And those are my baseball points.
All right. This past weekend, we had the 151st running of the Preakness at Laurel Park, not Pimlico, because they're working on that track. How come they got to work on every track at the same time, Darren? What the hell?
Because it's getting so bad to get the attendance at these tracks that they're trying to build up the big tracks more so that they can do them all year long, and you'll never see like Laurel again. We're never going to see Aqueduct again. There's certain things that they're trying to do so at least it becomes an entertainment center, because it's just you don't get the crowd because everybody can bet on their phone, so nobody's going to the track. So they have to make a spectacle out of it. They have to win the track, and they have to make a spectacle out of it. And that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, New York Saratoga still gets crowds. It's a summer,
but it's a party. But, New York Saratoga. There's a lot going on. The city's buzzing. It's only really lively for what, 6 weeks a year. Now it's maybe up to seven. And, you know, it's like a carnival atmosphere in Saratoga. But you're hearing
exactly what you said. It's a spectacle, Darren. Exactly what you said.
That's what they want. And that's what they're trying to do over it for the Preakness. And they're trying to make that. I mean, listen, this race is different than any Preakness you'll ever see because there's nobody on the infield. You go there, there's 150,000 drunk people screaming at these horses. Yeah. Before the race starts, and they're not doing anything bad. They're just boozing. This is what the Preakness is.
They what, 4,000 at Laurel?
Yeah. You know, they're used to $6,000 claimers at Laurel. They're not ready for this. Listen, not a great field, but again, we had a great race. It was a great finish. It was a great ride. Taj Mahal jumps out, right? And he's the Maryland bred, 3 for 3. Good fractions, 22 and change, 46-6 at the half. Napoleon Solo, horse I said to watch for, but didn't have on top because I'm not smart enough. I said he'll be the one that I think can sit there and come from off the pace. He pressed the whole way, top around the far turn. He passes him, comes down, and all of a sudden you start seeing the closures come. And, you know, I really thought that there was a chance that Iron Honor was going to take him. But even with the fractions, Napoleon Solo just had – it was a hell of a run. Paco Lopez did a great job. And Iron Honor finished the second. Chip Honcho, who was in mid-pack all the way around, finished third. Ocelli again closes for fourth. Gee, you had a point?
No, so Napoleon Solo paid $17.80 on a $2 win bet. The $2 exacta paid $107.20. Dollar trifecta paid $5.97. And the dollar super paid $2,377.80. So got some huge numbers out there again, Darren.
Yeah, 14 horse fields are going to do that for you.
Yeah.
And Taj Mahal was the favorite, went off at 9-2 as the lukewarm favorite as the race went off. Yeah. But there was, it was a really well-run race by Napoleon Solo. Again, I didn't like the field for this one. You guys heard me last week on that. Yeah. But you know, you got to give the horse the credit. And now for the Belmont. And again, nobody's confirmed yet. So you want to wait and see what's going to happen. But a lot of these Preakness horses are skipping the Belmont, which just tells us, Kev, that we have to start, out and getting the horses to run. Right now, Chief Wallaby's expected to run. We'll see. Chip Honcho expected to run. Commandment expected to run. Emerging Markets expected to run. Golden Tempo expected to run. Growth Equity expected to run. Ocelli expected to be the only one that runs all three, by the way.
The Maiden.
They throw her out there. Otinho is expected to run. I don't know that horse. Potente expected to run. Renegade expected to run. So Happy expected to run. You know, so these are the horses that we're looking at. And Talk to Me, Jimmy. Those are the horses I'm hearing, the 12. Out of those 12, listen, we could end up with 7. We could end up with 14. We're going to find out. Jake?
Yep.
The Derby winner, the female trainer, what was her name? I'm sorry. You remember? So it's okay.
I know her name. So
she was quoted, and I just want to get your opinion on this, both of you. So obviously the backlash the last couple of years has been that there's only a 2-week gap between the races. Would you guys be in favor of them doing the 3 big races of the Triple Crown the first weekend in April, May, and June, or May, June, and July?
By the way,
that's
I don't think you move the Derby at all, by the way.
Right. So it's May, June, and July.
Probably. Saratoga season is interrupted, but Belmont doesn't want to give up that race.
Yeah.
I think that I think that you maybe go to the last weekend of June and right before they go up to Saratoga and make that race and have the pre-race in early June or late May. And maybe you do 3 to 4 week stretches in between and maybe you get them to run more. I mean, listen, a lot of the horse racing is a big money game now. By the way, Mike Rapoli coming out saying he wants to try to buy the Jets and he's not a Jet fan. I was loving that. But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. But it's such a big money game right now that there's so much investment in these horses that they're afraid that they're going to break down before they get to go breed, to be honest with you. That's why they do it. So that they can win one big race and send them out to stud. That's really what the whole sport is about. That they don't want to put that pressure on the horses. They got to do something because when the Derby winner doesn't run the Preakness, there's no interest. Now we all watched it. You know, it was my daughter's birthday. We had 20 people in the house. Everybody's got bets. Everybody that doesn't have bets is asking me to put it online for them. And we're all sitting there because, you know, whatever. We're a degenerate Italian family gambling, and that's what we do. But it's not. But you know, if I was just had a million things to do, would I sit there and set my time around the Preakness with no Derby winner? Probably not. But I was home, so it was easy to do. I don't know, Kev. What do you think?
Yeah, it was. I was busy Saturday doing a whole bunch of stuff, and you know, you had the PGA to sort of keep track of, and all of a sudden I was like, "Oh, the Preakness is starting in 2 minutes. Let me put that on." And it was only because I had to be around that, you know, close to dinner time there when it was like, "Oh, yeah, that's right. Let me put it on." It was a combination of no Derby winner, and we, Darren, you mentioned it last week, it was not the strongest of fields. It wasn't like a field that you went, oh, even though the Derby's winner is not there, I want to see this other horse run. No, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, there was no horse from the Derby that was outstanding that you're saying to yourself, I think this was the best horse, and he didn't win the Derby, he had a bad trip, but I want to see how he does. Yeah. Like even last year with journalism running. You know, they did the same thing last year. Sovereignty didn't run journalism, but I wanted to see if journalism, because I'd watched them all the way through, I was interested in it. And by the way, they make these races at 7:01 now. What are we doing? I mean, these things should be done 5:30, 5:45, 7:00 at night. What are we doing with these things? Yeah. They're trying to own prime time with a 2-hour, preview show. Is this the Super Bowl? But anyway, a little bit crazy. I would be all in favor of them stretching it out and getting the better horses to run more often, Gino.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they need to listen to the trainers. I think they need to space it out a little bit more, even if it means making the gap 3 or 4 weeks in between, just so that these trainers aren't afraid to run these horses and you get the Derby winner racing and you get the second horse from the Derby racing. And because this way, at least there's some kind of, you know, a little momentum. I felt like there was no momentum going into this race. You know, we're into it, but we're going to be into it anyway. There's nobody else out there that's into it. So
what's the momentum into the Belmont now?
None. You got two different winners. You didn't have the same, you know, Napoleon Solo didn't race the Derby. The Derby winner didn't race the Preakness. You got nothing going on.
Napoleon Solo is already skipping the Belmont.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so the two winners aren't going to face off for a third time now.
I know. All right.
Yep.
We also last week had the 108th PGA Championship at Aaron Mink Golf Course. Aaron Rye. -9 won it. Shot -6 last 10 holes. Prize purse $3.7 million. Kev, Darren,
we had so much other stuff going on, and you know I was busy with other stuff. And you know, you look at the leaderboard, you keep track, and you know you see JT, the early 65, so he's got to sit in the clubhouse as a clubhouse leader for hours. Scheffler never made a move. McIlroy never made a move. You look at the top of the leaderboard, Aaron Rye. Okay, what is this? The John Deere Classic with him in the lead. Rahm and Smalley. You know, we haven't seen Rahm because he's lived. Smalley and another guy. You know, the leaderboard was not exciting. And let's face it, the PGA is the fifth of the five, if you want to say the still called five majors. It's the fifth if you count TPC. And when you, in Aramink, that nobody's ever seen anything played there, it kind of lost its luster. And it was hard to really get involved in. What do you think, Darren?
Well, Gino one shot two under at Aramink, so I don't want to shoot that down right now. It took a birdie on
it. Three under. I'm sorry.
It was a snake, but he drilled it.
Yep.
Listen, say what you want. Aaron Rye down the stretch, last eight holes, seven out of eight. Last 10 holes. I apologize. Seven out of eight fairways hit, eight out of 10 greens hit, 14 putts, an eagle, four birdies, no bogeys, and he gained 6.1 strokes. Everybody apparently loves this guy. He's the most popular guy on the court. Everybody loves him. They think he's crazy. His wife's a professional golfer. And so she's giving him advice as they're walking the night before going back. I'm just saying that stretch in your most pressure-packed stretch of your career, unbelievable.
Oh, he did a great job.
But, again, you look at the leaderboard. Justin's not playing, but he played a good round. Rahm up there was nice to see for a little bit. Oberg was competitive, Gino, like you thought he would be. McIlroy and Schauffele, Cam Smith. I mean, they were around, but it was really Matthias Schmid. I felt like I was watching the former backup goalie for the Devils. Alex Smalley, Roy Smalley's kid now plays golf. I mean, I didn't know these guys. So it did lose its luster a little bit. Happy for Aaron Rye. I didn't know much about Aramink going in. And the one thing I'll say is that usually the PGA, you score a little bit better. They struggled on this course. Everybody had a hard time scoring. It was not an easy course. And, I thought that there was one moment because, you know, Rory's so good when he hits a bad shot. He was still trying to chip over the sand, and it took a bad bounce and went to the sand. And somebody yelled USA, and I think Rory had the guy thrown out like he got mad. I don't know if he said other things before that. In Rory's defense, the guy could have insulted his wife. I have no idea. The only chant I heard was USA. And then he's like, that guy. All of a sudden, some guy's getting tossed out in Philly. Listen, we want good leaderboards. We want great golfers up there. We want Scheffler to hit a putt, and he couldn't do it. He was hitting fairways all over the place. He couldn't hit a putt. And that was the difference. When Scheffler and Rory make a run, the sport is completely different than when they don't. Gee.
Apparently, the golfers complained after the first 2 days that the course was too hard, that they weren't scoring, and then apparently Saturday, the pin placement was a lot easier than it was on Thursday and Friday. Aaron Rye still shot -9, you know, Rahm and Smalley at -6. So, listen. Aaron Rye had an eagle on 9 the last round and then shot -4 on the back 9. You know, he shot -6 on his last 10 holes. That's a hell of a final round right there. Right. You know, so well earned. Will we ever hear from Aaron Rye again? Who the hell knows?
Yeah. He was the first Brit to win this, the PGA in what is it, like 100 years or something?
Yeah, 100 years or something.
Something like that. Listen, happy for him, but again, you want to see Rory and Scotty making a run because that's what makes it exciting on Sunday.
Yeah.
All right. Any other final points we go around? Anything else? We got NFL point.
Go ahead, Kev.
I was gonna say the French Open this weekend.
Oh, French Open
starts, and you know the reason I bring it up, we are guaranteed not to have a Sinner Alcaraz final because Alcaraz is out with a bad wrist. He's out for the French and for Wimbledon. So Sinner's the one. Zverev moves up. Djokovic is still the third. But I think this opens up a chance. Shelton and Fritz, the two Americans, both in the top seven. Is this a year we finally break a drought going back to 2003 for a U.S. man to win a major?
It's so funny, Kev, because we grew up with Sampras. And before that, we had Agassi. And you had
McEnroe Connors.
But you also had, you know, on the French, you had Chang. Michael Chang won it there. You know, I mean, there was always Americans that were competitive. Even Jim Courier, like you just said, there were guys that were always competitive and that you always felt like an American was going to be up there. And then all of a sudden the drought hits.
Yeah.
And since Roddick had the one final, and they thought it was going to be Roddick and it just really wasn't because you got to be able to return a serve too. And Isner at 6'10". Got to be able to return a serve, too. I mean, they've never been able to do it. These kids are good. They got the size. They've got the strength. Yeah, but, you know, you watch Alcaraz at 22. What is he, 21, 22? Yeah. And Sinner the same age, basically. Yeah. These guys are masterful. It's like they don't make a mistake. It's ridiculous.
That's why I'm just thinking with Alcaraz that now you eliminate one of those two. Maybe there's a chance for a breakthrough here.
That's all you can hope for.
Yep. Women's side, Coco Gauff is a defending champ. But the French Open women don't announce their seeds until the draw that happens tomorrow. So who knows?
Absolutely.
Where she winds up. But that was it for the French Open.
Quick college basketball point. The great Will Wade is back, making friends everywhere he goes. So now the LSU basketball roster looks like this. Yam Mader, 25 years old. He was drafted in 2020. R.J. Lewis has now signed with LSU after being in the G League last year, after leaving St. John's. Bryce Desert, or Desert, however you pronounce it, 23 EuroLeague player. Marcio Santos, 23-year-old EuroLeague player. Mo Diabate, 22 years old. Austin Nunez, 23 years old. Basically, this guy is going to try to push the needle on everything. It's going to be this court cases upon court cases about trying to let guys over the age of 24 that have been drafted in the NBA play. And you have coaches coming out against this guy, not using their names, though, but they're saying he's a joke and he's a horror show and everything. Listen, he got fired from LSU the first time. Then he caught back. He coached well at McNeese, got to NC State after 1 year at NC State. Said F you, went back to the LSU. This guy makes no friends anywhere he goes. Listen, we can't have college basketball becoming a bunch of guys that get drafted by the NBA, don't make it, and then they go back to college. It's not college. This is not a college team. There's nothing about this team that's college. And honestly, neither is St. John's. And what's happening right now is a joke in this sport. Someone's going to have to regulate this in some way because it's getting to be goddamn ridiculous, as some people might say.
Does Shaq have any eligibility left?
I think Shaq. Yeah, somebody made a comment that I think Chris Mullin's got 1 year left, and let's bring him out there. Let's shoot some threes for him for the Johnnies. It's like, I don't know. They're killing my sport. They're killing it.
I had a laugh. You mentioned LSU. Just Shaq received another master's degree or something and whatever from LSU. And when they introduced him at the graduation, the speaker introducing Shaquille, I hate Charles Barkley O'Neal.
Oh, God. You got to love.
If you watch it, the NBA, the two of them love each other.
I don't love watching a lot of NBA games, but I do enjoy watching those two guys with Kenny Smith going back and forth at each other. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Not that they have a lot of fun. And he's not as good as the other two either, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, he's not in the same class.
But he's a Malloy kid, so, you know.
So therefore, I'm going to root for him. And one of our big listeners, Joe, probably has a shrine to him somewhere.
I got two NFL points for you. One, Aaron Rodgers says this will be his last year with the Steelers. And then
he's back.
Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice faces 30 days in jail after violation of his probation.
He had an injury anyway, so he wasn't going to play in the OTAs. No big deal. He'll just go to jail for 30 days. Too hot. The three hots in the cot. He'll be fine. Come back. Better than that. You got to love the NFL.
Yep. And the schedule release for the Jets, you can pencil them in, except for the West Coast games. Your Sunday at 1.
Right where we belong. Right in the sweet spot. Absolutely. It's
I love
no
it.
Place I'd rather be. But nope. One quick point on the Jets, by the way. At one point last night, when the Knicks were down 22, the Jets had higher odds to win the Super Bowl at 1% than the Knicks did at 0.1%, at 0.5%, I should say, of coming back and winning that game. So there's a chance. You're saying there's a chance.
Tell me there's a chance.
I'm saying there's a chance because the Jets at one point last night, the odds were better. You're going to laugh at me, Gino? I'm excited about this team this year.
No one's telling you not to be excited about your 5 wins. It's fine.
Listen, I'm hoping for 6. I don't think I'm going to settle at 5.
Okay.
Some people might take 5 right away, but at the end of the season, I'm going to hope I have 3 so I can get the quarterback I want. But during the games, I'm going to be rooting for him to get 8 and kill me in purgatory.
Okay.
That's just the way it works.
All right. I think that's it, Darren.
Any other points, boys, before we wrap up?
Nope.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we found out in May that the Jets still have a chance at a Super Bowl championship. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, tune in, whatever you like. Listen, we post a lot on social. We enjoy it. Please like our stuff. Please share our stuff. And if you get a chance, listen to the Sports Nuts. Listen to our show with those guys. We had a lot of fun with those guys last week, and we're going to get them to join us one day. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.